Again to the Bad Quaker Podcast, where liberty is our mission. Today is Monday, June 30th, 2014. It is the Monday after Porkfest, and what you're about to hear is a talk I had with Jeff Berwick. Jeff was one of the speakers at Porkfest, and unfortunately we lost the first 10 minutes of our discussion due to technical difficulties with sharing equipment and so forth. So hopefully you'll enjoy the next about 35 minutes or so with my conversation with Jeff Berwick from Anarchast and the Dollar Vigilante. And here we go with Jeff Berwick. So now thinking of island adventures and being on the great open sea and all things Central America and these romantic locations, that was years. How long ago was that when that happened?
When I sank my boat?
Yeah.
That was 2004 or 2005. 2005, I believe.
Now, just very recently, you had an island adventure that was quite different from that. Can you tell me about that adventure?
Yeah, that was something that I was in St. Kitts in the Caribbean, and I was there for a conference. I actually run a company that does second citizenships and passports for people from around the world. And we were there talking to at a conference where actually a lot of the top officials from St. Kitts were there and lawyers and things like that. And I had gone out with some younger people from the conference. And we'd been out drinking all night, and it was 3 a.m. We're at some bar. And I don't know what the other guys were doing, but they might have had some sort of substance that was illegal on that island. And apparently these police officers, if you want to call them that, they're mostly gangsters, the way they acted, which is what a police officer is. But they came up and they accused us all of having cocaine. But there was no cocaine there. And then they said there was, and they found some on the ground somewhere. And I actually did a sort of a nice thing, I think, at the time. They were both kind of younger guys, and I said, listen, you're going to take us all in, just take me in and leave these guys alone. So they actually were really rough with me. They threw me into the back of the squad car, and I was actually quite scared because they were yelling at me, pushing me, being very aggressive with me. They took me to the local jail, which was right in front of my hotel. It's a very small island, and the police chief was actually quite a bit nicer, and he said, did you do these things? And I said, no. And he said, okay, go in the back room. And they had this back cell, which was very, very basic, just a concrete room that I sat in. And I came out, and he said, okay, well, one of the policemen said that you had this substance on you. And I said, well, I have two witnesses that I didn't. And he said, I believe you, but now that he's signed it, you're going to have to wait till the morning, and then we're going to have to go to court, and then you're going to have to bring your witnesses and all that kind of thing. And then he said as well, and I'm trying to recall the story. I don't remember the exact details of how they happened in exact time, but he said, well, it's close to Christmas. It was like December 15th. He said, I think the courts might be closing soon, so if we can't get you in, you're going to be here in that concrete room for about a month until we can get you a court date.
Lovely.
And so I said, well, that's ridiculous. And I started to go on, I had my cell phone, and I had 3G or 4G access, and I went on Facebook, and I have a fairly large following of people who read what I write about. And I just mentioned, I was just laughing because I thought it was funny. It wasn't totally funny because I had been kidnapped and I had been accosted, but I don't worry too much about big things, little things like that. And so I just posted, I'm in jail in St. Kitts, and I got roughed up by the police. And literally hundreds of people started calling in to the St. Kitts. Literally, I'd posted it, and within a few minutes, the phone started ringing at the police station. And the police chief couldn't believe it. And I could hear what he was saying. He's like, yes, we have Jeff Berwick here. And no, he's safe. And, you know, and everyone was checking on me and saying that it's going to be a major political international incident. And at that point, he was pretty aware that this wasn't going to go really well. But he had no actual legal ability to let me go, because if he did, it was like I would be an escaped fugitive, because he'd at least have to wait till the morning until it could be put in front of a judge and said that they're going to drop the case. So he fell asleep at some point, and it was only him in the office, and he had allowed me not to go into the locked concrete room. And so I just decided to leave. And I went to my hotel room, and the conference was over at that point, and I thought, you know, I'm just going to leave. I don't want to deal with this. This is a real irritating that I have to deal with this. And so I started to pack my bags. And as I was leaving, I was walking out of my hotel room, he came running up, and he was quite overweight, and he was out of breath, and it was only a few blocks away, but he was like, why did you do that? And I said, because I don't like it there. I said, you know that I didn't do anything. Even if I did have this substance on me, there's no victim, there's no crime, but I didn't want to go into all the details of why everything they're doing is a crime and not me. Mm-hmm. But just based on their own rules, I hadn't done anything, and he had known that. And so he actually asked me, he said, can you please come back to the jail? Because if they find out you escaped, I could lose my job. And so I was actually quite nice with them. I said, okay, I'll come back. But I said, you got to get me some pillows or something. It's not comfortable at all in that concrete room. So we worked out a deal. And then in the morning, things just took a little bit of a turn for the worse, where it looked like they were not going to be able to get me out for a while. And I had met a number of lawyers on the island, and a number of the people still were calling in from the internet. And they were, I could hear, at this point, there was a whole new police crew on in the morning, and they were all females. And they were all kind of giggling and laughing. I guess they found me somewhat interesting to be in their jail. And I thought that was okay, too. I liked that a lot better than being with these old guys in jail. And I could hear them on the phone. They're like, what? People are calling the prime minister while he's getting his haircut and saying that if I'm not let free right now, it's going to be a problem. And they couldn't believe it. And it went back and forth for a while, and finally I went back in the back room and slept for a bit, and one of the police women came and tapped me on the shoulder, and we were in this very quiet, secluded room, and she was quite cute, and so I was kind of wondering what was going to happen at that point, and quite excited about the idea. And she said, I don't know who, she said to me, she said, I don't know who you are, but you just got the president said, or prime minister, prime murderer, I don't know what it is on that particular island, whoever the top criminal is, had said to let me out as soon as possible. And, and that's what happened. So that's how I escaped from jail twice in one night in St. Kitts.
And if you haven't, picked up on it already, Jeff is an unapologetic anarchist. And I like that. I like the honesty in that. I don't have a problem with people using other phrases, you know, if it's more socially acceptable or whatever. But I do like the honesty. One time I was at a T-Mobile place trying to see if I could get a hotspot to back up my Verizon hotspot, so we would have, you know, multiple internet backups wherever we were going. And so I'm in this T-Mobile shop, buying a hotspot. And the guy says, well, what kind of usage do you normally use? And I'm like, well, we're hitting about 20 gigs a month. You know, we're uploading, at that time, podcasts every day, and we're downloading multiple podcasts, and we're on the radio, and we're doing all these different things. So it's a heavy use thing. And he says, what kind of podcasts do you do? And, you know, I've been asked that question a lot of times, a lot of different settings, and sometimes I'll hem and haw. And that time, I looked at who I was talking to. This guy is probably 22. He's probably a part-time student, and he's trying to pay his bills working at the T-Mobile store. In the same location, there's another guy that looked like he was the boss, and he was maybe 25. And they both looked like, you know, I don't know, this is not the right word nowadays, but they were kind of, you could tell they were kind of hip, you know? And I just looked right at him and I said, I'm an anarchist and I want all government thrown away. And he looked at me first. There was like this odd pause while he looked over at his boss like, you know, what reaction is okay? And the boss was smiling and he goes, cool. and I thought, you know, how wonderful. Because if I said that, like we park at a lot of, RV, campgrounds and stuff like that. And there's a lot of veterans there with their flags out and I don't blame them. That's the only thing they know. They've been indoctrinated with that their whole life. Mm-hmm. They have been sold into this thing that your service was important, you know, out there in Vietnam, killing people or trying to not be killed for no particular reason whatsoever, but it was critically important and thank you for your service. And, you know, they've lived with that their whole life and that's the reality. And so I don't walk up to one of them and say, I want to destroy everything you believe is holy. You know, I don't do that.
No.
But I felt like right there in that T-Mobile store, I could just be honest and say, this is what I am and this is my goal. I want to kill the state.
Well, I'm finding that things are changing dramatically. I think if you would have said 10 years ago anything like that almost anywhere, it would be really poorly received. The word libertarian even 10 years ago, hardly anyone knew what that word was. I didn't even know what it was. It's changed dramatically. Now you have people like Glenn Beck say they're libertarian. Yeah, he is actually turning. Like, if you're actually watching what Glenn Beck's doing, it appears like he's getting very close to being an anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's also an opportunist. And the reason that he might feel more comfortable saying these things is because he's seeing his ratings go up when he says that now, mm-hmm. not down. And so there's a dramatic shift going on. And now the word anarchist has a lot of different meanings to different people and has a lot of bad connotations with some people. But when I first started and realized what the word meant, which is old Greek word, and without archist, ruler. Not rules, but ruler.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take that to its logical extent, it means that government, if you believe in anarchy, you don't believe in government because that is a ruler that is forced upon you. If it's a voluntary ruler, if you really want to voluntarily have someone rule you or lead you, I'm fine with that. But that is not the case with government. And so it's really changing dramatically. And I've been on the front lines of a lot of this just with what I do. I'm out there saying these things. And a lot of the things that I used to say even 3 or 4 years ago, which used to be called extreme, mm-hmm. is now almost mainstream.
Yeah.
We talked earlier, Tea Party is going on. They're definitely not anarchists, but they're leaning towards freedom a lot more than a lot of the political spectrum in the U.S. We're seeing the Libertarian Party and libertarian ideas growing tremendously. A lot of it sprang in the U.S. from Ron Paul and what he had done. Ron Paul, I think if you really look at everything he's done and everything he said, you'd have to say he's pretty much an anarchist, but he's never said that because mm-hmm. that word has connotations and that's fine. And that's why I have no problem. In different situations, I might call myself a voluntarist.
Mm-hmm.
Depends who you're talking to. Like you said, if you're talking to this veteran who's been brainwashed, unfortunately, and it's really sad, I'm not talking about them as they're really bad people. It's really sad what's happened to them. They've been propagandized into believing in a certain system, which is just outright wrong and immoral.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gone off and they've had these traumatic experiences where all their friends died and they've killed people and they've almost been killed. You can't just come up and just right off the bat just throw really quite strong words in their face. It's not going to help the situation, but you
right.
can say something like with a person like that. How I would talk to a veteran in the U.S., for example, if I met them somewhere, I would say that I'm a voluntarist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they would say, what does that mean? And I would say, well, I just sort of believe, this might be crazy, that all interactions should be voluntary. No one should be coerced by violence into anything. And it just gets them thinking a little bit. You can't really change a lot of people too quickly. The good thing, and this is going to sound kind of cold, is that a lot of those sort of people are dying off now. And that is... and I don't mean that in a negative way. I don't want anyone to die. I don't want anyone to be harmed or anything like that. But
right. That
is the beauty of, and that is the beauty of all time throughout human history of youth, because they come up with different perspectives. And you talk to most young people, and this comes back to your Sprint story, you can almost expect that most young people will understand what we're talking about because they've seen all the bad parts of the state.
Yeah.
They have not seen any of the good parts. They were born with hundreds of thousands of dollars of federal government debt overhanging them. They've been put into debt bondage. They can't get a job because of the economy, which has been ruined by the Federal Reserve and the government. The police are definitely not a good word with almost any young person because
school prison system.
Talk about schools as well. Yep. Many of them are starting to see it for what it really is. And then on top of that, they have access to the internet. So if they ever do question these things, like, is this the only way that we can really have a society or a culture is through this system? Very quickly, they're going to find libertarian or freedom or anarchist sort of ideas out there. And through the internet, they're getting access to that information. So there's a dramatic change going on right now. And it's just almost a epochal moment in human history, in my opinion, happening ever since the internet came out. I think if before the internet, I would have said, forget it. I'd just go live in the woods and try to live the best life I possibly could. I wouldn't try to change anything because it'd be hopeless. Mm. Because the status system, the collectivist systems, the idea that we are a collective, the non-individualist ideas, couldn't get through. Because the collectivist, people, the people who had these ideas controlled all the media sources. Government has controlled media, and that still is true to this day, but thanks to the internet, people get access to this information. So it's a dramatic change, and it's really exciting. It's also really interesting and scary at the same time, because this status system is going to go down even without us anarchists.
Yeah, exactly.
It's done. They've cashed in all the credit cards, all the socialism, all the fascism, all the things that they do have reached their logical end. And so even if we weren't around, it's going to end. So the whole point to me for anarchists or libertarians is try to spread this message so as these systems collapse, which they will, that people realize there is another way to live and it's much better.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking a little bit earlier, and I mentioned the thing that my listeners hear all the time from me, that so long as there's a market demand for government, there will be government, and as long as there's a market demand for freedom, freedom will increase, and at some point in time, the market demand for freedom will be greater than the market demand for government. And you had mentioned, Jeff, that one antiquated technology or way of thinking or whatever gets replaced in the marketplace. So we don't have to discuss, you know, aspects of whether we should invest in wooden spokes or whether, you know, because nobody buys wooden wheels anymore, and whether, you know, is investing in a portable cotton gin a good idea? Well, that would be a ridiculous statement, because you're talking about a technology that's been left behind, and that's kind of what I expect, as my listeners have heard so many times, I expect that the market will, the people, the demand will come to a point of understanding that governments are an antiquated technology and that they are no longer viable in the marketplace, and there is a market demand for freedom, and that the and governments cannot provide that.
Yeah,
and that's the critical turning point.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I call it government or statism anachronistic. Possibly had some value in some way to some people at some period of time, but it makes no sense in the digital age. And we were talking, you were just mentioning about how systems change. So ideas are not that much different than technology. You could think of them as one and the same, really. And so if you want to change Windows into something way better, do you change Windows or do you just create this new system, right? And same goes with ideas. If you want to change a system of ideas, which a lot of people still believe in collectivism and statism, you can't really change that system. What you do is you create a new system which makes the old system obsolete. And we talked about this earlier, that thanks to the internet and thanks to things like Bitcoin and the blockchain, all these incredibly amazing technologies that are coming out that are completely decentralized, we actually have the opportunity, because what government and statism and collectivism is based upon is violence. And that is the one thing that people really need to realize. And if they don't realize it, they will realize it at some point. And so the only way to, if so many people in this world believe in that system, the only real chance that we have is to decentralize things to the point where they can't use violence to stop those things. And that's what Bitcoin is. So Bitcoin is, for people who don't know, I'm sure many of your listeners know what it is, but it's a new form of currency or money that is not centralized. So even if the U.S. government, with all of its power and all of its, through its stolen funds and through its violence and its war machine, they cannot stop Bitcoin. There is no Bitcoin office that they can bust down the door with a SWAT team. There is no Bitcoin CEO that they can have a show trial with and put him into a prison or a cage for the rest of his life. They can't stop it. And now what we're seeing is the internet itself is becoming very decentralized to the point where in a few years, the entire internet will be very decentralized to the point where you can't even stop a website. You can't stop anything that anyone is doing through violence. And so this is a really amazing period of time that they say in the Bible, I believe, I've heard that's what's in the Bible, that the meek will inherit the earth. I don't know what they meant by the meek, but if what they meant by the meek was that people who don't initiate violence against others, which is what anarchists are, then yes, it is possible now through technology that we can inherit the earth. And by inherit the earth, what I mean is that we can live freely without these violent systems, all without using violence. And that's what's the most beautiful part about it. Because if you talk to anarchists, and this is sort of where the anarchy word gets a little convoluted. If you talk to anarchists 30 or 40 years ago, a lot of them would say, well, we have to use guns and go in and use force to get rid of the government. Which is a real oxymoron, of course, because the whole point of anarchy is not to initiate violence. But the anarchists would say that, well, no, they're initiating violence against us, therefore it's justified, which is philosophically fairly sound. However, the way to really get this new world going, which is we're on the cusp of, is not to use violence. And just like Gandhi, who you could say was quite anarchistic in many ways, he overthrew the entire British Empire in India without one shot fired. And that is beautiful. And that is exactly what we're talking about here. And through technology now, this can happen all over the place. And it's going to be very interesting to see not only how this collectivist violent system collapses, but how the free system, decentralized, nonviolent system comes into fruition.
Now, Jeff, help me with some alphabet here. Let's look at some B's. We have a lot of people know that you should have bullets, and a lot of people are understanding now that we should have Bitcoin, and take it from there.
Yeah, I just spoke at Porkfest. My speech was the 5 B's that every anarchist should know. I actually had the 3 B's last year at Porkfest. Those were bullion, those precious metals, Bitcoin, which at the time was around $40 or $50, now around $500, and bullets. And the bullet part is partially for self-defense and partially as an investment. The price of ammunition has gone up tremendously because the U.S. government and Homeland Insecurity is buying literally billions of rounds of ammunition, which should be a wake-up call to some people inside of the USSA as to what their intentions could be when they're buying this much machinery and weapons of war for homeland security, as they call it. So those are the first 3 B's, and I think they are important to surviving this coming transition, which I call the Great Transition. The fourth one just came up in the last year, and this is the beauty of free markets when they're allowed to happen, and that is bud, or meaning medical marijuana. It's starting to be, the war on drugs is coming to a close. And this is another symptom or a effect of what's going on. The awakening going around, on around the world, which has mostly been caused by people getting access to information through the internet. They can sort of see that they can, if people have any, proclivity to think about anything, to actually think about what's going on, if you start to look, is it better that literally hundreds of thousands of people are kidnapped and put into cages and literally thousands of people are murdered over this plant called marijuana? Or should it be decriminalized and then maybe a few people have a bad sort of, there's really no question once you start looking into it. And it's the same with prohibition with alcohol. So my whole point with bud or medical marijuana is that this entire market is opening up, and this is a billion-dollar market with clients around the world who all, these are all customers who have been using this substance illegally for centuries, and now it's becoming decriminalized or at least legalized, which is the second best thing. And I see a massive business opportunity there. So I've been investing in medical marijuana, mostly in Canada right now, because the U.S. government has been still holding on to marijuana being a Section 1 drug or whatever they call it. But there's opportunities around the world in that space. So that's the fourth B. The fifth B is what I started talking about at the very beginning, which is being. And I think just as important as protecting your assets and protecting your financial ability, your ability to have capital or to be able to survive, is being one with yourself. When I use the word being, I use it in many different ways. In one way, I use it as where are you going to be? I would not want to be in the U.S. in the next 10 years while this collapse happens. I think it's going to be worse and worse, and I see other parts of the world as being better and better, places like Latin America or Asia, where I spend a lot of my time. So that's one part of being. But the other part is something I talked about earlier, which is really becoming mentally, emotionally, spiritually healthier, because what's going to happen, in my opinion, over the next few years is going to be one of the most dangerous times in human history, not only for capital, but for people in general, because as this we've never had an entire global system collapse, and what I believe is going to happen is the fiat currency system is going to collapse. The U.S. dollar is going to collapse. Most currencies are based on the U.S. dollar, or they're their own fiat currencies that are backed by nothing. So we're going to see an entire economic system collapse, and you're not going to want to be in really bad health during that time. That's not going to help you. You're not going to want to be in bad emotional health either, because you're going to have this is going to be very stressful. So what I'm saying to people is get prepared for this, and that's something that I explained that I'm doing myself personally. I'm trying to just get more healthy physically, emotionally. Spiritually, and when I say spiritually, I'm not necessarily talking about organized religions at all. What I'm saying is try to get more, for me, when I say get more healthy spiritually, I'm talking about things like spending more time by myself, breathing the air, just sort of being more at one with myself, spending more time with my family, with my dogs, really enjoying those moments more. That's what I'm sort of saying when I say spiritually, just being more prepared, not prepared, but more peaceful and at one with my own life, because I know what's going to happen is going to affect so many people so dramatically that if they're not prepared for it on every single level, it's going to be even more difficult. So now is the time to start to think about these things, because these things that I'm talking about, I'm almost certain will happen, and not a lot of people are prepared for them, and it'll be a lot easier if you are more prepared for them in every single way.
And one last thing that I wanted to that I would really be cheating my listeners if I didn't mention this and let you talk about it a little bit. If you go to the Dollar Vigilante website and look on the right hand side, and you'll see a thing about passports, about Dollar Vigilante passports. Jeff, if you would explain to my listeners what that is and what it's about.
Well, I'll explain the philosophy, and this is something I've lived personally. And so when I first launched off on my sailboat, some of the ideas I had were that I don't want to be tied to one country. I don't want to be under this government and their taxation systems. I don't believe in any of it. I think from every single perspective, it's immoral. It's wrong. It's even if you do think taxes and socialism are good, you can look at the evidence now and know that it ruins, it makes people poor. It doesn't actually help people by using theft to steal from some people, running it through a huge bureaucracy that doesn't even know if it's doing anything good or not because it doesn't have a profit, which is essentially what communism is. And then at the end, a few people get a few dollars, and that's the whole system. So it's an entirely bad system. So I've lived a lifestyle or a way of living called the permanent tourist or perpetual traveler or prior taxpayer theory. It's PT theory. And what you try to do is you try, in this status world, unfortunately, we can't live as just individual human beings without being under direct threat of immediate violence all around the world. And I'm not talking about crime, and I'm not talking about robbers. I'm talking about governments, which is People don't necessarily see it as incredibly violent institutions, but that's what it is. If you don't pay them, they will kill you. And so there is ways to live. And so what you brought up is I help people get passports around the world, because especially for American citizens at this moment in time, the U.S. government is closing every door possible right now. Capital controls, things called FATCA. If people want to look that up. It's the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act. They're making it almost impossible for Americans to open a bank account outside of the U.S. So it's a nefarious form of capital controls. But they're doing it very nefariously and very intelligently, really, in that a lot of Americans don't realize it's not like the U.S. government has announced to U.S. citizens, you can't take your money outside the country. What they've done is they've gone around the world and said, if you take U.S. citizens' money, that we're going to shut you down one way or another using our power structures. So they're doing it very nefariously. So one way to get around that is, it's funny, as an anarchist, to want more than one passport. I'd prefer that there is a world with no passports, obviously. I don't think you need permission from anyone to travel, except for on private property. If someone owns a property, of course, you have no right to go onto the property. But a publicly controlled or government controlled is not private property.
Right.
And so, therefore, we shouldn't. And it's funny, because so many people take passports for granted, like it's always been this way. Passports have really only come into effect in the last 100 years.
Exactly.
100 years ago, it was a few people would have them. It'd usually be someone like some adventurer would use it. He'd have it, his king would sign it and say, please accept this person. He's going to be traveling through your territory, and please accept him, and he has our backing. Sort of, it was sort of like a welcoming letter sort of a thing. Then after World War I, which all came into effect after the Federal Reserve was put in, central banking, which has enabled all of these wars, they've more and more started to close off and make all these different countries, so you can't even travel between these countries without a passport. Even up until the last decade, you could go to Mexico or Canada as an American without a passport. Now you can't. They're closing the doors. So the only way to live freely, free-ishly in this world today, while we still have all these status structures, is to have more than one passport. And then you can have find ways around taxation systems, all legally. It's very legal what you do. You can open foreign bank accounts if you're an American. So it's just different ways to find more freedom through having more permissions to travel.
Folks, I've already said the website is dollarvigilante.com, and be sure and search on YouTube or just through Google or whatever for Anarchast, and get into the archives and listen to the older ones. Jeff, anything else you want to cover while we're talking to the folks here?
No, I think that's we've covered quite a bit. I just want to mention that we just had yourself, Ben, on Anarchast. That'll be coming up in the next week or two. And we've had many great anarchists on there. We've interviewed about 140 anarchists now. We're almost running out. No, I make that joke, but there's actually so many now. It probably 10 or 20 years ago, we would have run out by now. But great people, just off the top of my head, Doug Casey, Lou Rockwell, Jeffrey Tucker, Wendy McElroy, a great individualist feminist, so many great people.
You just today interviewed Bill Buepert. My audience likes Bill a lot.
Bill, yeah, I've been trying to have him on for the last year. I'm so glad to finally have him on. We were talking about Paul Rosenberg, probably one of the most intelligent historians, true historians, who really understands the true history, as far as we can tell, of humanity, because we really don't know too much. But and he comes at it from a completely individualist, anarchist perspective. And so when he's looking at the history of the world, it's not like in the government textbooks where they're saying, oh, it was good that this government attacked that government. He's not looking at it that way. And it gives a much better and more sound perspective on things.
Jeff, I really appreciate you coming on the show. I want to extend an open invitation. Anytime that you ever have a moment, we can hook up over Skype or whatever. I'd love to have you back on. If you have any future projects or anything like that, or whatever, just feel free. I'll move whatever mountains or the stars above to get you back on here. So I really appreciate you coming on the show.
I appreciate it, too. Thank you very much.
And folks, for we're probably going to be switching up the format at Bad Quaker. We're kind of kicking among the staff. We're kind of kicking things around, trying to figure out what the next manifestation of this website's going to be. We're looking at maybe having some kind of a change in the way the archives. We've got, you know, something like 370, 360, something like that in podcasts now. And the archives are a little clumsy to get through, so we're looking at how to reformulate that and make it a little bit more accessible. So we're open for input on that, badquaker@badquaker.com. That goes right to the staff, and multiple people get to read the email like that, and that's a good way to give a suggestion on what we can do to improve the website. In the meantime, get to badquaker.com, or you know, you can also hear me on the Freedom Fiends radio program. We're on something like 25 stations and something like 20 cities across North America. And you know, if you're near a city, be sure and listen in on that. Or on LRN, Freedom Fiends are on LRN and on the Genesis Radio Communications Network. And so, folks, be sure and to get over to badquaker.com, where liberty is our mission. Thank you very much, folks.